Repair Show, starring Jim Baskin. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Baskin's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Yes, it's Sunday, and I'm here, even almost breathless, rushing to sit in the seat and to put on a good culture repair show. I'm your host, Jim Babka, sitting here today with a case of allergy-induced asthma. So I absolutely need you to call today. Of course, if you are a conservative Republican, particularly conservative Christian, maybe this week you're just finally waking up, realizing that George W. Bush is not your savior, and if just hearing that angers you, then go ahead and shut your radio off. But for the rest of you, 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. And if you call the show today, I want to arrange to get a CD in your hands, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush. The surprising insights more and more Christians are having, and no, they're not deciding to vote Democrat. I had a conversation with somebody about a year ago now, getting licenses renewed. Happened to run into somebody who lives on a block away from me. And he was just very, very excited about George Bush and felt that George Bush was going to win the election, and you know, even though it was close. And he was surprised that I wasn't supporting George W. Bush because both of us happen to be Christians. And I explained to him that I didn't, and I gave him a copy of one of these CDs. And as we began talking, and I began talking about the fact that George W. Bush was making big government bigger, and he was off interfering in other people's affairs around the world more. He was nation building, as he promised he wouldn't do, how he'd broken campaign promises, how he had lied. This pastor friend of mine kept retreating, but his last refuge was the Supreme Court. Of course, we all heard the news this week, and I'm going to be talking about that. In fact, we're going to do a Constitution update and talk about this subject. But if you call the show, you get on the show today, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush, I want to get a copy of this in your hands. It's available at culturerepair.com if you prefer to buy it. You can also email to get on the show, How about comments at downsizeddc.org? I do this every week. You'd think I'd know it by now. Comments, plural, at downsizeddc.org. Well, to start off the show, I've asked Harry Brown to stay on. He was just on during the last hour with John Chandler, giving some excellent investment advice. And I wanted to get Harry's take on what's going on right now because, you know, there seems to be, it seems like maybe, Republicans are in a wee bit of trouble. People are like having their eyes open. I'm seeing it all over the place. And so I want to welcome on to the show my favorite radio host, Harry Brown. Harry, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here. And, what can one say about George Bush?
Well, that's what I want to know. What can one say? Specifically, what can one Harry Brown say? I have here opinion polls from 2 weeks ago. His job approval rating compared to 2004 has gone from 52 to 40. On the economy, it went from 49 to 35. On foreign affairs, from 47 to 38. On the situation in Iraq, from 48 to 32. And this was almost simultaneous with what was going on in New Orleans, so New Orleans isn't really figured into these numbers, I don't believe. Is the president in trouble?
Yes, he is. I think even more so, the Republican Party is in trouble because we have this rupture now where Tom DeLay is walking around in a fantasy world, as George Bush has been doing for several years, when Republicans suggested if we're going to spend up to $200 billion to rebuild New Orleans, we've got to take this money out of the budget. We've got to cut something else in the budget. And Tom DeLay, the Speaker of the House, said, well, there is no place to cut. We've already cut the budget to the bone. And we have done, in 11 years, we've done a really good job of bringing spending under control in Washington. Well, the budget this year is 14% larger than it was last year, and it's $2.5 trillion. I mean, this is not bringing spending under control, and anybody who thinks it is just walking around in a dream world. And many Republicans in Congress recognize that, and they're revolting against this. They're offering all kinds of alternative budgets where it cuts out this and it cuts out that and so forth. They have their eyes open. I don't think they're cutting nearly enough, of course, but at least they recognize that it has to be done. And Tom DeLay doesn't. Now, the really significant thing is that in almost 5 years, George Bush has never vetoed a bill. He hasn't even vetoed that $2.5 trillion bloated spending for this year. But now he is threatening to cast his first veto. And what is it going to be? Can you imagine? His first veto will be against a bill that prohibits torture of prisoners captured by the American military.
It's good to have principles.
It's just amazing. Amazing.
I had made a note on this poll. I pulled it out of the paper, and you know, I pulled stuff together throughout the week and so forth as I get ready to do the show. And this was before we knew what was going to happen this was right at the same time that we found out that Bush was probably going to spend his way out of the situation in New Orleans too. He was going to try to find a way to be the savior and use that. And the note that I wrote here, Harry, is with these low poll numbers, I wrote, he's going to spend what it takes to buy back people's support.
Well put. Well, yeah. How many billions of dollars do you have to spend to go up one percentage point?
I think we're going to find out. It seems, though, that his spending is actually hurting him. I mean, it's interesting. The night that he gave that speech in New Orleans where they temporarily lit the place up so he could give the speech and then the lights went back out again. That night on TV, I was shocked to see Tim Russert. And I don't know why I was shocked by this, but, you know, usually reporters are standing there and they're very kind of, you know, somber and grave and talking about the situation and who won and who lost. Tim Russert was Timmy Russert. He was jumping up and down with glee talking about Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal and how this was going to be the first city of the 20th century, 21st century. He was extremely excited about this proposal.
Wow.
Has it backfired on Bush?
I think that what is happening is an invisible kind of erosion, that every week a few more Republicans leave the farm, and we don't see it because it's not news, and it's not all at once, and it's not publicized by the people who are giving up. But it's just bound to be that way, that finally a lot of people are just throwing in the towel and saying, you know, you've been right all along, to whoever their friends were who were trying to tell them that George Bush was not their savior.
Harry, I've got here a former White House speechwriter who was the son of a Republican congressman, Richard Viguerie, redstate.org, all of them saying perhaps it's time to cash in the chips and walk away from this guy.
Yes.
We have the story in the Washington Post here about the Grover Norquist Wednesday meeting and the Paul Weyrich Wednesday meeting that went very badly for the administration spokesman that went to those meetings.
Yeah, and all of those people there, no matter how conservative or even libertarian they have definitely been Bush supporters. And as I say, they're just dropping off one by one. And it's not big news, even though you did see something in the Washington Post about it, but it's not big news, and so it's like the silent majority, you know, the invisible majority that's just turning away and leaving the farm.
I actually feel good that this is starting, people are actually starting to see this or wake up. Harry, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.
1-800-259-9231. I'm giving away a CD to get you to call Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush. And that sound you hear in the background are Republicans all over the place drinking the Kool-Aid.
Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org, or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
It's 20 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Culture Repair Show with your host, Jim Babka. My voice sounds a little bit off today. I have a case of allergy-induced asthma, and I'm taking my Singulair. And I think it has something to do with the fact that I'm babysitting this dog, Haley. I don't know. I am allergic to animals, and having one more animal in the house, and we already have two dogs, seems to have had an adverse effect on me. So if I cough or sneeze during the course of this broadcast, please excuse me in advance. 1-800-259-9231. Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George Bush is the name of the CD. It's available at culturerepair.com, but you can get a copy for free today by calling the show, 1-800-259-9231, or email me at comments@downsizedec.org. And I just had John, the faithful engineer, telling me I actually sound great today, and I appreciate the encouragement. You know, we were talking with Harry before the break about the Republicans, and I just want to suggest to you Republicans, it's time to wake up and face reality. I mean, you've tried to pretend that you were the party of small government, that you were somehow or other going to be more responsible than the Democrats were. If we had a Republican in the White House, it would make all the difference in the world. And we're going to get to the last refuge of that pastor I spoke to earlier about the Supreme Court in just a moment. But I don't want to leave this segment without making very, very clear that George W. Bush panders like Clinton and he spends like Johnson. Here's the figures. George W. Bush has boosted total inflation-adjusted discretionary spending in his first term by 35.1%. Now, to put that in context, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who created the Great Society and fought a war as well, the guns and butter policy, only boosted discretionary spending 33.4%. So the biggest spending president in the last 40 years, Lyndon Johnson, has now been passed by a Republican. And as Harry told you in the last segment, he hasn't vetoed a single bill. The first time now he's threatening to veto is to keep the right to torture in place. People, we should be shocked by this. This president campaigned, he sat across the table from Al Gore in the debate, and he said, I'm not going to start a nation-building corps. I mean, and what is he doing? And then they told us that there were weapons of mass destruction. And there were none. And they've spent money, and they haven't vetoed. I mean, they've spent it like crazy. Let me give you some examples. You know, I'm coming at this as someone who was a dyed-in-the-wool, ditto-head conservative Republican. I bought the whole program. Now, I was starting to fade with guys like George H.W. Bush and particularly Bob Dole. Bob Dole drove me out of the Republican Party. But in 1994, I was extremely excited about the Contract with America. Well, what's the legacy of the Contract with America? The Competitive Enterprise Institute's Clyde Wayne Cruz Jr., quote, "Most people assume that Republican politicians replacing Democrats on Capitol Hill in 1995 would lead to small government anti-regulation policies. That assumption turned out to be wrong." Cato Telecom Chief Adam Thayer, quote, "Many Republican policymakers rallied around the cry to get the government's hands off the Internet. If we judge the GOP by those promises, then the last 10 years of Republican rule are generally a failure." This is my favorite one. Cato education analyst David Salisbury, quote, "Recent federal education spending increases have been massive. Gone is the idea that there is no constitutional role for the federal government in the nation's schools. Instead, the Department of Education has been adopted as the Republicans' favored stepchild. The last 10 years have been a great disappointment to people who felt that the 1994 elections signaled an effort to cut the federal government and remove it from areas such as education where it had no legitimate constitutional role." You Republicans that have been out there saying that you care about the Constitution, that you're conservatives, that George Bush is a good conservative Christian man and he cares about these values, it's all been proven a sham because by their deeds, you should know him. By his deeds, you should know exactly where George W. Bush stands today, and he does not believe in small government. He does not believe in limited government. He does not believe in our nation minding its own business. He believes that government can do everything, and that is why he stood up after New Orleans and proposed that he could do it all. Franklin Delano Bush style, he would have a program for everything. Let's talk about his latest mistake, the thing that is now upsetting Republicans the most. I want to do a Constitution update because, after all, I am the godfather of constitutional soul. All right, yeah. Well, this is our Constitution update. Is Harriet Myers qualified for the U.S. Supreme Court? My name is Jim Babka, and I am unqualified for the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, those of you that know me well would say, well, of course you are, Jim. You didn't even finish college, let alone pass the American Bar Association requirements. And indeed, that would be true. I left university as a senior, causing my father temporary anguish over what would become of me. But if you think that's why I'm unqualified, the Bush administration might well suggest your charge has a whiff of elitism. After all, our president, the graduate of two Ivy League schools, doesn't care about such things as what the establishment thinks. Now stop laughing. We know indeed that we live in interesting times when someone that most politically informed Americans have never heard of is, according to the nation's chief executive, quote, the most qualified person I could find for the job. What did he really mean by that? Now, personally, my choice all along has been Janice Rogers Brown. She has the right philosophical pedigree and temperament. She's very libertarian or conservative, very independent. She's totally committed to a so-called strict constructionist view of the Constitution. She also has the proper curriculum vitae. She's presently a federal judge. She served as a justice on the California Supreme Court. Now, the president wanted to promote diversity in the court. Well, she's African-American, and redundantly obvious, she's a woman. There are no African-American women on the court, never has been. Her nomination could have been an historic first. So who could have been more qualified? Harriet Myers. And why, pray tell, is Harriet Myers qualified while I am not? And in all seriousness, why is she more qualified than Janice Rogers Brown? Well, here's the answer. She has no paper trail. And I've got a paper trail. Just Google my name, Jim Babka. And that all by itself disqualifies me and partially settles my career aspirations. Since I can never be on the Supreme Court, why bother finishing college and going to law school? And boy, does Janice Rogers have a Brown have a paper trail. I especially encourage you to check out her whiter shade of pale speech given to the Federalist Society. In the post-Bork era, are we reduced to picking Supreme Court justices the same way we pick jurors? The fewer informed opinions they have, the better? We all know George W. Bush doesn't like paper trails. We have Rathergate. We have the cover-up of his drunk driving record. Now, personally, I can't stand elitism. I'm disgusted that two Skull and Bones Yale graduates were our choice for president, and that the last three presidents have all come from Yale. I love seeing people who graduate from state universities reach the pinnacle in their field. The likelihood of merit is generally higher. But Myers is not a merit pick. She might be a very nice person and an efficient manager. And we'll get into this, the rest of this on the other side of the break. 1-800-259-9231 to get a CD or email me at comments@downsizedc.org. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you? Violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, Your Honor, I didn't know about this law. How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea. the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details just like you do. Check out DownsizeDC.org because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
You know, I was racing to get through that update and get it done by the time we hit the bumper music, and I didn't do it. I mistimed my plan here. Well, oftentimes I'm just making this look easy, folks. All right. Well, we were talking about Harriet Myers and why she was more qualified, and we're talking about elitism. And where I left off, I said that Myers is not a merit pick. She might be a very nice person and an efficient manager. She might even be the toughest person in size 6 shoes, as we've been told. But those qualities don't qualify her any more than they qualify me. Size 9 shoes, by the way. Merit in the instance of a Supreme Court justice nominee means having well-formed opinions and the ability to express them to others in the legal field. Blogger Ed Brayton, for example, who frequently writes about legal issues and has been a guest on this show, used to be a debate coach, and he's more qualified than Myers, in my opinion, even though he's never passed the bar either. So I propose something. Let's postpone the hearings on Myers, allowing her to complete an assignment demonstrating her true qualifications. Before we begin, let's ask her to do something relatively simple. Number one, read the Constitution. Then, number two, pick a topic from that document, a single subject of that law. And then, number three, publish a single scholarly paper on it, staking out a position. Go ahead, Harriet. We'll wait. Our elitism demands no less. Well, this has been a Constitution update. And I bring up Harriet Myers because as that conversation last year with my pastor friend, who lives just a block away from me, illustrates, there was a huge expectation on this part of conservatives. People who were salt-of-the-earth type Republicans, they don't want Washington doing everything. And they recognized in 2004, by 2004, many of them recognized that even with a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate, that the Republicans weren't going to do what they wanted them to do. But they held out hope that there was one thing that George W. Bush would do that John Kerry wouldn't do, and that is appoint a pro-life president. Now, I want to go back to the debates for a minute. I wish I had a clip of this to play for you. But in 2004, there was a pivotal moment in the debates between Kerry and Bush where George W. Bush made very clear that he was not going to appoint a pro-life justice to the court. Not on purpose, anyway. He said he had no litmus test. Do you remember the phrase litmus test? Now, the litmus test phrase was a phrase that his father had used. We didn't hear the litmus test phrase much in the 90s. But in 2000, it came back with George W. Bush. And in 2004, it was there in full force because everybody knew that Chief Justice Rehnquist's health was failing. Court insiders knew that Sandra Day O'Connor's husband's health was failing and that she may be looking to retire. And we have yet another justice on the court who is 85 years old. So the likelihood that Bush was going to get at least 2 appointments, as he has, was extremely high. But he said he had no litmus test on the question of abortion. Now I want to contrast that with John Kerry, who told his supporters exactly what he was going to do. He was not going to put somebody on the court who was going to overturn Roe v. Wade. Folks, Roe v. Wade is bad law. It's the federal government unconstitutionally telling the states that they can't regulate a particular behavior. There is no constitutional provision for it. You can call up and argue with me all you want, talk to me until you're blue in the face. The right to privacy is contrived, and what it basically says is that a doctor and a patient have the right to commit a crime, and nobody can penetrate that. They have privacy. I'm oversimplifying, but this is a radio show, and I've only got an hour. Not even that. But the point is that this decision should be overturned on the grounds that it's not constitutional, and it should be overturned on the fact that this is something that the American people, state by state, have the ability to decide in their own criminal code how they're going to handle or address this issue. It's not asking a whole lot. Now, the president may have taken some heat, and there may have been some people who wouldn't have liked it, but his supporters believed they believed, they had faith, that this faith-based politician was going to do their bidding. And so talk show hosts and spin doctors said, don't worry, he's got to say this to get elected. And then he picks Harriet Myers. And then, for example, even picks John Roberts. We don't know whether John Roberts is pro-life or not. We aren't going to find out until the time comes. He has not staked any strong positions on this particular issue. Otherwise, his confirmation hearings would have been a lot more contentious. And the Bush administration does not want to waste any political capital with poll numbers like I shared at the top of the show on trying to pick a principled Supreme Court nominee. There is no reason left to trust or support politicians to deliver to you a smaller, more limited, constitutionally guided government. You have absolutely no reason to believe anymore. Republicans told you during the 80s that they couldn't get anything that they wanted done because Tip O'Neill pronounced it dead on arrival. And then in 1994, they won with the Contract with America, took over in 1995. And they said, well, we can't do it now, even though we control the House and the Senate, because we have a Democrat in the White House. In 2000, they had the Republicans, shortly after 2000, temporarily lost the Senate. And so they had a little bit more of a stall. But since 2002, and now we're into 2005, since the end of 2002, the Republicans have had control of the Senate. They've had control of the House, and they've had control of the White House. And government is growing faster than it did under Lyndon Baines Johnson. Are you pleased by that? And when you find out that the president picks somebody that has no demonstrable record of even having thought about these issues, hasn't written about them, hasn't been a judge, yeah, go ahead and call me an elitist. This week we had reports in the Washington Post. There's Wednesday meetings that go on on the right. There's Grover Norquist Wednesday meeting, and at the Grover Norquist Wednesday meeting, they sent over some people from the White House to talk to the participants in that meeting. It ended up becoming a very contentious meeting, more contentious than anybody can recall any of the previous meetings being. And there was Paul Weyrich's Wednesday meeting. Some people from the White House went over for that as well. That meeting also turned contentious because those people in that room thought, look, you may have abandoned us on several other issues, but the one, and we've stood by you in every one of them, but the one thing we expected out of you was to appoint a judge who was qualified, who was going to take charge and lead the fight to win on issues like abortion. They wanted to move the court to the right. This has been a very important issue. You know, the president missing this. This was a huge issue last year. There was a lot of talk about this. There were conferences going on over the winter about exiling judges, about deposing them, impeaching them, reviving the impeachment power for federal judges. This clearly was an issue that mattered to George W. Bush's base, and he had a tin ear. Now, he picked Harriet Myers. He said he looked into her eyes, and we know that she's been with him for a very long time. Does that mean that there's cronyism going on here? The people have thrown that charge around, and frankly, I'm unwilling to do so. I'm unwilling to stoop to that level because I don't know. I there's a pattern of that kind of behavior in the Bush family, and so it seems plausible, even likely. But can we know for sure what George W. Bush's motives were here? I don't think so. But what we can know is that Harriet Myers is not someone who's principled and strong like Janice Rogers Brown, someone who can hold her own in the court sessions with her colleagues because she has been there, been tested, and thought these issues through. I'm giving away a CD if you call 1-800-259-9231. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it. I didn't approve it. I wasn't even consulted." If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Doesn't allow me to get into all these. I'm holding a handful of quotes from people who commented on an article that was called "Should We Trust the Bush Administration on Harriet Myers?" by Jeff Myers. It's a different spelling, so clearly unrelated. But this article was just as convoluted as could possibly be, and I've seen all kinds of people, you know, bending into various gyrations to try to justify this nomination. Here's one quote. I'll just share one of them with you. Let's see now. "We are trusting him to run our country. We are continuing to trust him to be the commander-in-chief of our military. Yes, I do believe that we can trust him to know better than we do the person he has selected to sit on the highest court in the land." Thank you. And by the way, she capitalizes "him" every time as if she's talking about Jesus. This happens to be on a Christian website. I'm struck by the fact that there are people willing to drink the Kool-Aid for this guy. It stuns me. He's let everybody down. If you cared about principle at any point in this, he's let you down repeatedly. And I'm giving away a CD. I called it last year. And I documented, as of last year, how bad this administration was from someone who had a conservative perspective. And how do I know? Someone who had a Christian conservative perspective. Because I'm an evangelical Christian, and because I used to be a conservative Republican. Now, I still believe in radically small government. I still believe in the Constitution. It's the Republican Party that's left me, not the other way around. Why conservative Christians are reevaluating George W. Bush, the surprising insights more and more Christians are having, and no, they're not deciding to vote Democrat. It's a CD. I'm willing to give it away to the first caller at 1-800-259-9231. Let's do a quick GOA update. They are the sponsors of this show. Gun Owners of America, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. And once again, I just want to repeat to you, House Bill H.R. 800 needs your support. This is the bill, the clean version of the bill we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. It's the clean version of the bill. It needs to be voted on, not S-397, which is the Senate version of the bill, which is encumbered with some anti-gun provisions. This version of the bill needs to be voted out, H.R. 800, and it is going to protect gun manufacturers from frivolous lawsuits. There's information about this right now. It's the top link of the current items at gunowners.org. I encourage you to check it out. In fact, I encourage you to visit Gun Owners. They're sponsors of this show. Gunowners.org. Check out their website, please, and join them. You know, speaking of Republicans, we got DeLay. You know, Harry referred to him at the top of the broadcast when he was on with me for a few minutes. You know, DeLay said we've got nowhere else to cut. We've been fiscally responsible. And that with the largest discretionary spending increase, even larger than Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was the largest in recent memory. And now we have ethical problems following Frist. We have a campaign promise violation back in Virginia for George Allen. These guys are both out running for president. Methinks the Republicans are in deep trouble right now. And part of the reason they're in deep trouble is that they haven't been honest. They haven't been honest. So let's do a war update. War is, after all, the father of government lies. Yeah. Well, we have used this segment each week to highlight a lie by the Bush administration. Most of them tend to be foreign policy related. And so we have yet another. We've got a very, very long list, and I thank Steve Perry for this particular one, who wrote the column called The Bush Administration's Top 40 Lies About War and Terrorism. This was number four on his list. The aluminum tubes were proof of a nuclear program. Even after Bush, even after this fact had been corrected, he went public with this. The sentence of Bush's State of the Union address was just as egregious a lie as the uranium claim, though a bit cagier in his formulation. Our intelligence sources tell us that Saddam has attempted to purchase high-strength aluminum tubes suitable for nuclear weapons production. This is an altogether false implication, and may be untrue in its most literal sense. As the London Independent summed up recently, quote, the U.S. persistently alleged that Baghdad tried to buy high-strength aluminum tubes whose only use could be in gas centrifuges needed to enrich uranium for nuclear weapons. Equally persistently, the International Atomic Energy Agency said the tubes were being used for artillery rockets. The head of the IAEA, Mohammed El-Baradei, told the UN Security Council in January that the tubes were not even suitable for centrifuges. But that didn't matter. That absolutely didn't matter. George W. Bush had a war on his mind, and he's still got a war on his mind. Since we've got the time, we'll let this update be a two-for-one, a second lie. Iraq's weapons of mass destruction were sent to Syria for hiding. Or Iran, or they just shipped them out, was a rallying cry for the administration in the first nervous weeks of finding no weapons of mass destruction. But not a supporting bit of evidence has emerged. Not one, folks. They continue to tell you the lies because the war is has benefited this administration. But it's starting to unravel. The poll numbers are starting to decline, and Republicans are beginning to jump ship in the House. They're beginning to say, we got to stop all this spending. We got to get it on track. And there's even some Republican congressmen that are starting to oppose the war, starting to ask serious questions about it. It's coming apart. The hubris. I want to talk about that when we come back from the break. And I want to talk about an extraordinary thing that just seemed to be a blip on the radar screen when the president said it this week. Come back after the break. If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention. The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, to permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws. That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog, or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
And we're back. Final segment of the Culture Repair Show. And, you know, I came in today wondering if I was prepared enough for this show. With my asthma condition, would I be able to get through it? asthma, by the way, is a recent thing for me. I didn't have it as a kid. So I wondered if I was going to be able to get through the whole thing today, and I have. I feel fine, and I'm enjoying myself, and as usual, wish I had another hour to spend with you. Now, you know, something happened this week that just absolutely stunned me, just knocked me back on my heels when I heard it. And it seemed like it was a blip on the radar screen. It didn't seem like anybody got upset about it. Maybe people just don't realize the implications. But there's all this talk about the flu, this special avian flu or bird flu or whatever that's going to come over here. Okay? Now, we've had these health scares in recent years. There's been several of them that were supposedly... How many of you remember, for example, SARS? That didn't really develop to be the problem that we thought it was going to be, or that we were being told by the experts that it was going to be. Y2K is another example. And there was, you know, all this cataclysm, and was the government prepared enough? There's criticism about, you know, to the Bush administration, are they buying enough of the drug that's necessary? And the answer, by the way, is no. If this does take off, they don't have enough of it to give away to all of you to save your lives. But it's interesting that the president commented about this during a Rose Garden press conference this week, and he was suggesting that we may need to quarantine an entire city or region if the flu shows up in that area. And the only institution that he knew of capable of enforcing such a large-scale quarantine was the military. Folks, he's suggesting martial law. Now, some people, I think, are probably going to embrace this. It's, you know, we've fallen so far. In 2000, if I would have told you that there would be, you know, you would have to take off half your clothes at the airport, and you could be cop, you know, they could cop a feel anywhere they wanted and go through all your bags, and that there would be men walking around with M16s, you wouldn't have believed me. If I would have told you we would be out conducting wars, that we would have attacked nations that never attacked us, you wouldn't have believed me. If I would have told you that torture was going to be a debatable subject, whether the United States could torture or violate the Geneva Convention, you wouldn't have believed me. If I would have told you that the president was going to increase departments, every department he could, including the Department of Education, many of you conservative Republicans wouldn't have believed me. This is the world that George W. Bush has given us. And folks, it is the world that George W. Bush has given us. This is how he has chosen to respond to the crises before us. He has ultimate faith in government. Now, who doesn't have faith in government? Janice Rogers Brown. She says, we no longer find slavery abhorrent. We embrace it. We demand more. Big government is not just the opiate of the masses. It is the opiate. The drug of choice for multinational corporations and single moms, for regulated industries and rugged Midwestern farmers and militant senior citizens. At another time, she said, government acts as a giant siphon, extracting wealth, creating privilege and power, and redistributing it. I've got quote after quote after quote by this eminently qualified African-American woman who should have been George Bush's pick for the Supreme Court. It would have been an implied campaign promise kept. He didn't keep it. Folks, my CD is available that I've been talking about through this show at culturerepair.com, and I'm practically giving the thing away. You can go to culturerepair.com and get the CD, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush. It was put together before the 2004 elections, but it's still prescient today. I'm encouraging you, folks, keep your eyes open, because eyes are opening all over the place. People are waking up. It's time to stop trusting politicians.